Welcome to the first version of La Liga Weekly, the one before we realise we've got everything wrong and start again. That's never worried you before, say the listeners. Yes, I'm afraid football was made to look silly by senior administrators who didn't understand their own rules. It would never happen in any other sport. The Champions League redraw gives Cristiano Ronaldo the opportunity to ruin Atleti's European hopes for what would be the sixth time. That's if you include the time he scored the fourth goal in the 120th minute and celebrated like it was the winner. I'd actually suggest that Atleti will be happy to face Manchester United, having had Bayern in version one. Real Madrid will be miffed to go from Benfica to Paris Saint-Germain, but that's because UEFA hate them and it's a conspiracy. That time might see Sergio Ramos revisit the Bernabeu, although he's played in precisely one of PSG's 25 matches, so that's a 4% chance. What a bargain free transfer signing he's been. At the weekend, Madrid won their 10th straight match in all competitions with their fourth consecutive clean sheet. They're 13 points clear of Atleti, whose game in hand doesn't look that useful in the circumstances. Sevilla are grinding out at least some opposition with another 1-0 win to say 8 points off the top. And it's Betis who are looking like the best of the rest with a fourth straight league win since they lost the derby. This one was assisted by Real Sociedad's goalkeeper turned right wing back, Alex Ramiro, who dared to take the high press to new levels. Congratulations to Levante for their La Liga record of 25 games without a win. And what a way to break up the milestone, a 4-3 defeat at Espanyol in which they led twice. And can everybody please stop being surprised when Barcelona don't win? It's happened in 14 of their 22 games. In case you missed it, the previous president overspent a bit by roughly €1.5 billion. And the only quick solution is to sell Philippe Coutinho for €700 million. They are third favourites to win the Europa League. Why? They're eighth in La Liga. Anyway, easy on idea. Go for a midweek friendly in Saudi Arabia. By the way, I don't mean the thing about UEFA conspiracy. There are many conspiracy theories around, and they're always in something that is utterly shambolic. Nobody could possibly have conspired to produce the mess that UEFA produced today. If they fix football, it's by giving all the money to the rich teams. That's how they fix football, and they do it in front of our faces.
Calm down, John.
Right. Terry, what about, welcome to the Patreon. If you want to be a Patreon, by the way, patreon.com/LTEL, and you get the extra stuff that we do. Thank you to the new Patreons who have joined us. Thank you to Lex Luthor. He wants you to talk about F1, Terry. Are you qualified to talk about the F1 this weekend?
If I look straight, probably.
Yeah, you could be the race administrator, whatever it's called. He says, hi, guys, I'm sure you've heard about the end of the F1. Yeah. Forgive my fury, but that was a effing farcical end to this season. I know football isn't and never will be perfect, but at least it doesn't reach such massive scales of daylight robbery. Are your opinions any different? And then he asks us a question about Real Madrid maintaining their levels. And it's a good question, actually. We'll get to that because we'll do the Madrid. We'll do the Champions League briefly, and then we'll do the Madrid derby. Yes, of course. Do you have a view on the F1?
I guess what I watched, one lap.
The last one. Do you watch the last lap?
We huddled around an iPad. It was on the same time as Villarreal against Rayo Vallecano, and we huddled around an iPad to watch what was happening, and waiting whether it was going to be the safety car going around until the checkered flag, or whether it was going to be this last lap. So I have no idea what happened before. Just saw the last lap, and it was pretty exciting, to be honest. I mean, just watched lap.
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Because it had for aficionados, I mean, I a friend of mine is a Lewis Hamilton fan, if there is such a thing, but he is. And he said he was shaking with anger that such a thing had happened. I suppose it would be. You know what I mean? If it came down to, you know, if it was down to Real Madrid versus Barcelona and a terrible administrative error resulted in the title going one way or the other. They box themselves into a corner. They because they got it wrong. They should have. Oh, here we are, the La Liga podcast. They should have let all the lapped cars out. So that was the technical mistake they made. Lewis Hamilton was unlucky. I don't share Lex Luthor's anger in it because I might mention this every now and again. It crops up every now and again in football that I think the I think the big teams in football get all the breaks. So when they get an unlucky break in a game, I'm sort of thinking, yeah, I know, but, you know, cry more because you get everything else in your favour. And Lewis Hamilton, that's the fastest car. And always that's the fastest car. So, yeah, it was the it broke against him and he was unlucky. So, yeah.
And there you go. You know, you've got to mention the tyres.
Yes, yes.
That's the only thing I know. The only thing I know, I didn't watch any of it. We're watching La Liga. And then someone got an iPad and at the live action, one or two people were talking about it in the studio in text, what they were reading, and someone managed to get it up on an iPad live. And we huddled around and watched that whilst on the big screen was Rio against Villarreal against Rio.
Yeah.
So we do nothing. Barely anything would happen before, and we just see it was a race with one
Spanish life. Commentary of F1 involved two blokes talking about tyres for long periods of time. There's a lot of tyre chat in F1 commentary, isn't there? We don't in football commentary. We don't sit around chatting about the boots or the playing surface, do we? But because more happens, because it's a better sport. Right. Anyway, on that bombshell, let us talk. Yeah, because as I say, football never messes anything up, of course, does it? As we say, yes. So that was a mess today, wasn't it? So,
I saw at the airport that I was reading it online at the airport and was thinking that there was stories about it all over the place, and I then come to the conclusion there'd been a mess up. I don't know. Shouldn't it just be a draw?
No. That would help, wouldn't it? Yeah, they rather like the F1. They put these regulations, they put loads of rules in that they then struggle, that then just creates the pitfall.
To adhere to.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't play anyone in your own country, can't play anyone you've played in the group.
There's only 16 teams
in it.
Yeah, yeah. So you do end up with this situation, and they basically forgot. They forgot to put... the possibility
five
that
balls
Man United
in one and seven in another or something.
Yeah,
as
well basically, Man United could have played Atleti, but they didn't put Atleti in the pot. I think when they drew, they missed that and only put. Who did Man United get first time round? They got PSG first time round, didn't they? Yeah. So then it's a whole redraw, which is just. So as I say, you know, Real Madrid in particular went from Benfica to PSG, which is you know.
But again,
rather similar with the F1. It just is. You know, it's unfair. It's annoying, but sometimes you've got to live with stuff, haven't you? You know.
Yeah, I personally, I would just have the draw. I know there's a benefit for winning the group. Perhaps you put them in one pot, the second place teams in the other pot, and just have a draw.
It's all to do with taking away
the. Playing the same team in your cup. I mean, Spain had five teams in this competition. They could have had five in the last 16.
Yeah, yeah.
Then
four English
none of them
clubs,
can play each other.
Yeah, who's
they
allowed
can't
to play?
Play teams. Yeah, yeah they can't yeah. play against teams they played in their group.
Yeah.
So that's another five teams they can't play against.
Yeah. Because, so, again, and we shouldn't, I know I shouldn't complain as a La Liga podcaster who works in the Premier League, but if they're going to give nine Champions League slots to those two countries, and then say they can't meet in the group stage or in the round of 16. You're tripping over yourself, aren't you? It's all basically to please the big clubs in the big nations and the broadcasters, because what they don't want is Liverpool and Man United knocking one another out, or Real Madrid and Atletico knocking each other out. But I'm with you. Just you know, by all means, have first and second seeds. Maybe make it so you can't play the same team again, but all the can't play the same country business, just nonsense, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. Definitely. Right. So there we are. We've fixed that bit of the world. We haven't, because they won't take any notice. Right. So we get down to the business, the actual business that we're here for. We're talking about the La Liga games from the weekend. The outstanding game of the weekend, Terry, was won by the outstanding team of the season so far, the ultra-efficient Real Madrid.
Levante. That was the game of the weekend.
One day, it was the game of the weekend. One day we'll be able to say Levante have won a football match. Actually, to be fair, they won 8-0 in the Copa del Rey, didn't they? But they can't spread that out over eight different games, unfortunately, for Levante. So the most efficient team around at the moment, Real Madrid. Not to say, though, that Courtois has not played an important part in their excellent run. couple of lovely goals for Real Madrid to beat Atletico, and they are in a mighty position now, aren't they?
Yes, I mean, the 42 points, I think it is. It's not enough to win the league, so they've still got a lot of work to do. They're going to need another 30, maybe 40 points to do it. But they're in a commanding position. They've come through an incredibly tight, difficult run of fixtures as well and won them all. Hmm. And you can see why Ancelotti is playing the same team pretty much every game. Just the one position that's up for grabs. He was keen to get Benzema back, even if it was just for half a game. They're playing, they're just so efficient. They're playing really well. They've got a style. They're athletic at the back, so they're hard to get past in terms of the defence, the back four, it's individuals. They're hard to get past. When they do, it's difficult to get past Courtois. The midfield three have been outstanding. And I've noticed a difference with Casemiro. He's not the as obvious a holding midfielder as he once was. I'm looking at Casemiro now, and he's doing a similar job to Kroos and Modric in terms of, you know, we tend to ignore when he's in the attacking third of the pitch and coming up with a good pass because we think that couldn't have been Casemiro. He's not meant to be there. But he is, and he breaks into the box. So it's kind of, they're working it out between the three of them that one of them will stay deep. And the form of Luka Modric in that game was incredible.
It's amazing.
He's 36 and he's, you know, I love the fact that the Real Madrid crowds gave him the standing ovation when he dispossessed João Felix, player half his age almost. And João Felix had him in a good position to take on anybody in you know, slightly wide on the left, attacking the penalty box, one against one. And Modric dispossessed him and then run away with the ball. And the crowd, you know, everybody at the Bernabeu recognised it. And it's good that they do that because they've got the obvious heroes at the Bernabeu at the moment. It's Vinicius and Benzema. And in the past, it's been other players. Ronaldo, of course. But I think that they assume that Modric is always going to play like that, always going to be there. So it was delightful that they actually, you know, they looked at it and thought, he's been brilliant tonight. It was a reason, one reason that they, and one particular moment they had where they could give him a standing ovation. He was absolutely terrific. What they're going to do with him at the time, I presume they're going to keep him. I'd be astounded if they didn't. You know, he's still such an important player. And at 36, still as good as ever. And incredible shape. I mean, his workload, his work rate. We're not just talking about a player who's good on the ball and does this and does that and is a good passer, got a good touch. He works his socks off in every single game. And he was the real, I mean, Real Madrid had more quality than Atletico. But even he shone in a team that's playing so well at the moment and got so much talent in their team. He is, you know, in that performance last night, he still stood out. Sensational little footballer.
Yeah, yeah. And he breaks forward as well, doesn't he, so well. Which he doesn't have to get away with that without doing that, wouldn't he? If he did his defensive job and he did a linking up job between defence and midfield, he'd get away with it. But he's making forward runs all the time as well, isn't he, still? Can I ask you the rest of Lucas's question? As for Real Madrid, I hope they can maintain this level of consistency. I haven't regarded Carlo as a serial league winner. I say mainly because at Milan, he had enough talent to dominate Serie A, but only won one out of eight titles. Hopefully, we will see a better record than that this time around, obviously, with his Real Madrid hat on. It's an interesting point, isn't it? I mean, he has won league titles at multiple clubs, but particularly in that period, Milan didn't dominate. They were the best team in Europe, weirdly, but not the best team in Italy, which was a bit of a paradox. But
yeah.
Yes, but I think all the signs are that they will see it through, aren't they?
Yes, I've made the point that they still need another 30 odd points to win the league, so there's still work to be done. There's at the moment they're playing particularly well. They've got key players. If anything happened to them, if they lose confidence, if they do drop some points, and one team does get start getting closer to them, you know, there's still over half a season to go. So at the moment, clearly they are in great form, the best team in the league by quite a distance. And importantly, they have a style as well now. I think the first goal summed them up. I mean, both goals summed them up last night. We could make a point on air on the La Liga studios. We were talking about how dominant Real Madrid were, but I said if we analyse the game, we can actually make a case for Atletico weren't that bad because of how well Courtois had to play. Mm. So there was large periods of the game where it was very even, but the decisive moments were the two goals. And also, having scored the first goal, how they managed the scoreline, Real Madrid, with their experienced players. You know, they could slow the game down then. They didn't have to go toe-to-toe with Atletico Madrid. They had good spells of possession where the crowd was chanting Ole at every pass, and then all of a sudden they go quickly. In the blink of an eye, they score a goal. And they it was a trap that was set for Koke on the first one. It was poor play from Koke. He got away with one mistake, got dispossessed, but he got the ball back, and then he tried an incredibly difficult pass, which was exactly what Real Madrid were hoping for. Modric was the one that anticipated, read it, he knew it was happening. He got a touch, Casemiro takes over the ball and sweeps it forward, and before you know it, I haven't had a chance yet, I haven't just got back to look at how many seconds it was, how many touches of the ball it was before Real Madrid had down the other end of the pitch, and Benzema finishes off with a spectacular volley. So, and the second goal was exactly the same. They have this enthusiasm and plan to get forward and play the ball forward as quickly as possible when they recognise it's on. And when they do it, Carvajal finished off as the centre forward on the second goal last night for Asensio. And it was his run that caused an Atletico defender to pick him up to allow Asensio space. So it's obviously a plan for Ancelotti that whoever can go, go. Toni Kroos got into the box for Benzema's goal. He was on the edge of the box. So he sprinted half the pitch to get just to make that extra number. So you're not just relying on two. Suddenly, that you know, in 3, 4, 5 seconds, Atletico charging back towards their own goal. They know there's a problem. Half of them get dragged towards the ball. They forget about Benzema because there's enough white shirts running alongside them and running past them. It causes panic. And you don't have a time to think clearly because why hasn't anyone marked Benzema when they're running towards goal? Vinicius is out wide. He's given a little give and go with Asensio. He runs in behind. Everyone's running back towards goal and Benzema just stopped, slammed the brakes on. And Vinicius finds him with a lovely chip and it was a lovely volley as well. So, but in that split second, 4 or 5 seconds, when you're running at full pelt to get back, it shows how hard it is to have the clarity to actually go, oh, I'm going to mark Benzema. You don't. And Real Madrid take advantage of that. But it's because they put the numbers forward as well. So Kroos making up a number gives someone a problem. Danny Carvajal breaking into the centre forward position for Asensio's goal caused an Atletico Madrid defender a problem. You don't have time to think, oh, it's Carvajal, I'll leave him, I'll go mark Asensio. It's a white shirt, someone picks him up, and then someone else spare. So if Carvajal's not there, Atletico might have defended that goal. If Kroos wasn't there, Atletico might have defended that goal better. So that it's scintillating stuff when they play the ball forward quickly from midfield. Having broken up play, and they hit you like a dagger. It's fantastic football.
So Ancelotti has won the league in Italy once. Yeah. He won it once with PSG, once with Chelsea, once with Bayern Munich. So he hasn't ever won La Liga. So this would be his fifth if they do it. The 2 years, I just looked it up. The 2 years, he got 87 and 92 points in his two previous seasons with Real Madrid, which is it's not bad, is it? Certainly no. The 92, it's just that those, you know, Barcelona that year were remarkably good. And they finished third the first season. It was behind Atleti. Let's move on, shall we? Where should we go next? Shall we? We'll go to Barcelona. We'll do
Also, we better touch on Atletico.
Yes, go on.
Been a weird week for them, losing to Mallorca, beating Porto. Then they're slightly disappointed, I'd have to say. They looked really ragged at the end of the game. The substitutions didn't particularly help. I was surprised to see Griezmann come off and Carrasco at half time when both players are playing pretty well at the moment. A makeshift defence again. This chopping and changing with a back three and a back four. João Felix came on and looked absolutely sensational for 10 minutes, you know, and then drifted out of the game again. and so many question marks about the lineup. Suarez on the bench. I was surprised he was even on the bench after coming off against Porto, and he looked like he was a season-ending injury, to be honest. And then next minute he's back and training and within a day and ready for the derby. So I thought Cunha was a positive. I thought he gave Real Madrid more than enough problems. I thought he led the line well, and shades of maybe a Diego Costa replacement long term. You know, in terms of the type of centre forward that Costa was, Cunha shows he wants to be aggressive. I thought he was harshly penalised on a few occasions for a few challenges he's made. That's his job, to be up front, to be aggressive. So I thought that was a positive for Atletico, but they struggled to deal with the threat of Real Madrid and pace in terms of pace in attacking play. And it really did knock their confidence, that first goal. Once they conceded that, after that, it was, well, we don't want to commit too many players forward. Don't want to go too far past the ball, because within seconds they're going to be in behind us. So it's a difficult situation for Simeone. They're so far behind now. And you rightly in the intro said that Sevilla are the closest challengers. So I think it's down to Sevilla to be the challengers to Real Madrid, if there is going to be any. So a lot of work for Atletico to do. I think they're below par for where they should be this season.
Yeah. Not retaining the title, are they? Interesting game, as I say, against Manchester United. But we'll get to that. I'm not going to preview a game 3 months
in advance. I think we know what to expect from Real Madrid now, don't we? I don't know what to expect from an Atletico play. Because I don't know what the lineup's going to be. I don't know what the shape of the team is going to be. I don't know if they're going to play well. We've seen them play really well this season in some games, and terrible. Mallorca home defeat, Porto win, lose to Real Madrid. A loss isn't anything to be embarrassed about, but I think the nature of the defeat at the end of the game, when they didn't really ever threaten to come back into it, is kind of where Atletico are at the moment. So inconsistent.
We discussed the Porto game with the Patreons on Thursday before you flew out to Spain. Let's just give it a quick 30-second recap. So they got through. You weren't appalled. I wasn't appalled by it. Watching Porto Atletico, what did you put it on for?
Portugal against Spain, Porto against Atletico. I have no idea why anyone was surprised it wasn't the type of game we got to witness. It was absolutely nailed on it was going to be like that.
Yes. Right, let's go. Well, you mentioned Sevilla. Let's do Sevilla quickly, shall we? Another 1-0 win. I mean, they messed up the Champions League massively, but maintaining a level of consistency, got to give them that, in La Liga at the moment, if not exactly excitement.
Yeah, they weren't consistent in this particular game, though. They were so fortunate to get away with a win. I mean, Athletic Club have just literally forgotten how to score a goal. So in this game, this should have been, I'm going to go 4-1 win to Athletic Club. I know I'm not big on the XG, but they hit the post twice. They was unlucky. Iñaki Williams missed the sitter. Mignon missed the sitter. There were other chances that went begging. And it was a moment of pure class from Delaney to score the goal. I think if you're an Athletic supporter, you'd be disappointed to have drawn that game 0-0, let alone get beat 1-0, because Sevilla didn't do anything in front of goal apart from Delaney show a piece of magic from outside the penalty area and puts it in the top corner to beat Unai Simon. And it was crushing for Athletic Club, crushing for Marcelino. They played really well. It's difficult to know what a manager would say to a group of players after a game like that. You've got to lift their spirits. Got to keep their confidence up, or try and regain their confidence in front of goal. They did so many things good, and yet come away again, empty-handed in terms of finding the back of the net. I think it's 13 goals this season, and two of those are own goals.
Yeah,
they've conceded 11, so that's to their credit.
Different problem from what you were saying before? Because before, in defence of Iñaki Williams, you were saying that they weren't even getting as far, that, as you love to put it, the XG was low, you were saying. But in this game, they were creating chances and are still not finding the back of the net. So it's a slightly different... It's another problem, isn't it? New ways of not scoring.
It's an anxiety issue now, isn't it? You can tell. I mean, every game they're playing, that they're thinking, similar to Levante, that they can't win a game. Athletic, they have the feeling that the world's against them, you know, and no matter what they do, they either come up against an inspired goalkeeper or they hit the post on a couple of occasions like this game. And the two big chances, one to Iñaki Williams and one to Mignon, both definitely should have been goals. It's tough luck when you hit the post, but the two big chances should have been taken, and it would have a different reflection on the game. As it was, Sevilla had players missing, quite a few players missing, actually. But still, the starting 11 was full of international players. I think maybe all of them were international players, so that shows the depth of their squad. But they didn't play well. They've had a difficult week. I think Delaney made the point that they seem to always, at the moment, be travelling it to games. So I can't think of the game the week before, but I think they're at home to Villarreal. So, you know, travelling to Athletic Club, travelling to Austria in the midweek one, players missing out injured. It was just a game where Sevilla got away with one, to be honest, and then came up with a winner with a fantastic goal from Delaney. Kills it, left-footed from outside the box, right in the top corner. Lovely little first touch to set himself up, and it was enough to win that game. But it's the type of game you have to win when you are trying to challenge at the top. And that's exactly what they did.
So the other team challenging at the top, as it were, is Betis. This was another funny game, wasn't it? So 4-0 looks like they've absolutely thrashed Real Sociedad out of sight, doesn't it? But and I suppose they have, because that's the scoreline. No one says it's anything otherwise. Alex Moreno gets two goals, sets one up. The goal machine that is Juanmi scores again. Nabil Fekir scores. Real Sociedad had ample opportunities to have changed the outcome of the game.
They dominated for an hour in this game. For an hour. They were 1-0 down after an hour, but they dominated in terms of every aspect of the game.
Yeah.
And they've ended up getting beat 4-0. Kind of, they're going through that little period now where they're beginning to feel sorry for themselves. And, when things go against them, they're thinking, well, we've got no Mikel Merino, we've got no David Silva. They were brilliant against PSV. I saw extended highlights of that when I was in Spain. They're absolutely fantastic in that game. Whether that took a little bit out of them when they went past the hour mark, but I think it was more the scoreline that demoralised them. Having played so well and been the dominant team, Porto was fantastic, but could have scored a couple of goals. They could have been 2 or 3 up. They found themselves one goal down, and then at the end of the game, Betis run away with it and rack up a 4-0 win. That's what, you know, what makes football so interesting. We're talking about Athletic Club should have beat Sevilla. We're talking about Courtois playing brilliant for Real Madrid, Atletico having shots on goal, attempts, a lot of attempts on goal, good attempts on goal. Yet Real Madrid were a more impressive team and won 2-0. And we're talking about this game where Real Sociedad were fantastic for an hour and ended up getting beat 4-0. So it's why we have such an interest in football. It's never, but it, often it's not as straightforward and logical as it life should be.
Right, question.
And that's what Real Sociedad are struggling with at the moment.
Terry, I know you're not a qualified goalkeeping coach, but do you think Alex Ramirez made a mistake on that first goal?
I have three mistakes. One mistake was initially coming, wasn't it? And then he stopped and thought, oh,
what am I doing?
And then his second, his second mistake was then to go again and continue his run. Instead of making the first mistake and think, I'll get back in goal.
Yeah.
He came, stopped, and then went, oh, sod it, I'm here now. I may as well go and play right back. And then the third mistake was not making the foul.
Because
he wouldn't have got sent off.
Yeah.
Because he'd have just been like an outfield player, wouldn't he? The player had his back to goal, his back to Ramiro, and he was in no man's land. And there's suddenly just a big path opened up where Moreno just steps onto the ball, and it's just like a massive channel for him to just run until he taps it into the empty net. Good goalkeeper, but that was a blunder, and he made a big blunder in the Derby
against
Athletic.
And this was
Matthew
worse than
Ryan
that.
Has been playing well, so it's a little bit of pressure for Ramiro to hang on to his place now at the moment.
It was an absolute aberration, wasn't it? Because there was a defender there, wasn't there? The centre-back.
Yeah.
And he came, how far out was it? He must be 20 yards outside the box in the right back position, isn't it?
By the touchline.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a channel ball down the left, hopeful channel ball. There's no need for the goalkeeper to be playing in that, playing right wing back, basically. And then thinking twice about it and then committing himself to going all the way and then getting stuck in no man's land. And then not making a challenge, bringing down the player and, you know, maybe putting a shirt or something. He got rolled and then that was it. It was an open goal. So it's 1 point in the last four games for Real Sociedad. Tough going at the moment. They're a young group, missing important players. I think David Silva's a miss, obviously. Monreal's a miss because they're such a young group. And Mikel Merino. So those three missing in the middle of what is becoming a slump now is a tough little period for Real Sociedad. But I still think they're capable of finishing top four. That's up for grabs. The fourth spot, I think, is up for grabs. And they've got every chance of doing it, despite losing 4-0 to Real Betis, who have been sensational. Great atmosphere at the stadium. It was a sellout that game. And we had that lovely tradition that we're seeing there every year from the Betis fans. It looks spectacular as well, doesn't it?
Did you see the teddy bears? Yeah.
The teddy bears and pouring down from a very high stadium as well, isn't it? Which makes it really spectacular. So it's a lovely gesture, and they really embrace that.
So they pass them on to kids in need, basically, don't they? Everyone takes soft toys, teddy bears, whatever, and chucks them on the pitch. It's quite funny, isn't it? And then the rest of the game.
You're at the top of the stand, you're chucking it down to the bottom stand, and they chuck them on. So it's just raining soft toys.
And then the rest of the game is played. Gesture. With piles of teddy bears around the place, you've got the juxtaposition of angry looking coaches and stuff with a massive pile of teddy bears and soft rabbits and stuff.
I think Panda was the favourite one this year. I saw lots of people took a panda because of Jorge Iglesias being called the Panda. I'm not sure if he seems to embrace that.
Mildly insulting, isn't it?
You look like a panda. I saw in the last game as Celtic, that someone was dressed in a panda fancy dress costume with the sign saying, Jorge Iglesias, can I have your shirt? And he went across at the end of the game and gave this panda bloke dressed up, I presume as a bloke, dressed up as a panda and gave him his shirt. So he embraces the nickname. It was a lovely gesture. And Betis are, you know, riding a wave at the moment. As you say, responded well. And it's great to see Sevilla and Betis. Sevilla have been the dominant team in that city for a considerable amount of time now. And Real Betis fancy their chances. Who knows, we might get a Europa League final between the two of them in the Sanchez-Pizjuan. That would be something else.
They got better draws, probably, didn't they, than the others. So Sevilla versus Dinamo Zagreb. Barca got Napoli, Zenit versus Betis, and RB Leipzig against Real Sociedad. So they're fascinating ties. We won't bother previewing them now because, as I say, it's the end of February by the time those games are played. There's a quick look at the league table, though. If you're just a listener and not a patron, then you can't see. Real Madrid are top with 42. Sevilla, the game in hand, 34. Betis also played 17, 33 games. Atletico, again, 16 played, 29. So Betis are looking really good, aren't they, in that position? Real Sociedad have 29 points. Real Vallecano 27. Valencia 25. Barcelona, should we go there next? Played 16. They've won 6. They've drawn 6. They've lost 4. Goal difference of plus 6. 24 points, Terry. It is not a good situation. They got a 2-2 draw away to Osasuna. And as I say, when they got a lot of the coverage in England, certainly, when they got knocked out of the Champions League, they'd lost to Bayern Munich. And everyone was, Barcelona are out. And it was on the BBC News and stuff the next morning. Is that... I know people don't listen to Spanish football podcasts. They don't necessarily have a Liga TV. This is no shock, is it? This has been coming because of the financial crisis that they are in has meant that that's the squad that they're left with. And drawing 2-2 with Osasuna is where they are.
Yeah, they've got to get the injured players back, but we keep saying that. We've been saying that all season. And they've got to do some work. They seem determined to do some work in January, but they're going to be limited to what they can do. But this group of players, I would say, they should be above Rayo Vallecano, maybe. Mm. But I'm not sure they should be above Valencia. I don't think they're any better than Valencia. They're certainly not better than Real Sociedad, Atletico, Betis, Sevilla, and nowhere near Real Madrid. So it's not a surprise when they go to Osasuna, which are an incredibly tough team to beat in their own stadium. They've only won one game at home this year. But when you look at the Barcelona lineup, it's not a surprise to see them drawing at Osasuna. It's not a surprise to see them where they are in the league. It's one away win all season. It's an incredibly tough job for Xavi. It really is. He's having to use youngsters. He's having to use Luke de Jong at the weekend because Memphis Depay was the latest striker to be missing through injury. He's chopping and changing, giving young players opportunities because he's forced to. I think there was one or two positives, but they mainly were the younger players. Nico scoring his first goal, Abde scoring his first goal, Gavi with his assist to Nico for the first goal was particularly good. And maybe I think Umtiti was a positive as well. I saw him make one mistake, a dodgy back pass that looked really shaky early in the game, went off for a corner. Other than that, he was pretty solid against opponents that started with Kike Garcia, ended up with Entia Budimir and Chimi Avila, and were throwing everything at it. And I thought he actually looked quite fit, despite not having played for such a long time. So that maybe is another name that Xavi can bolster the starting 11 with.
They need some senior players, don't they, who aren't old players. Yeah. They do need some players at their peak. And Umtiti is a long way off his peak of 3 years ago, maybe. But he's still the age where he could still be a key player, isn't he, for Barcelona? And there's no obvious sign. I mean, I joked at the beginning about them selling Coutinho, but there's no obvious sign that anyone who they tried to sell previously would be available, would be bought now, is there? You know, people didn't want Coutinho in the summer when anyone could have had him.
Well, they didn't want him when he left Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
Barcelona didn't want him back.
Yeah.
And they hoped that his form at Bayern Munich, where he was a fringe player, I know he scored a couple of goals against Barcelona, but he came off the bench to do that for Bayern. No one bought him then. No one's bought him since he's been back at Barcelona, and it's going to be difficult to see someone coming up with the money that could satisfy Coutinho first and foremost.
Yeah,
let alone then pay the transfer fee that Barcelona want. So it's going to be really difficult. And I think I have to be honest with Xavi at the moment. The system of play is changing too much.
Right.
He's asking players to play out of position too much. And it has a look of a very confused group of players on top of them feeling totally demoralised because of what's happened to them. Alba was missing again at the weekend, so that's another player that was missing. When you look at the lineup back three, I worked it out because we had no idea what the shape of the team was going to be when we got the 11. Literally no idea because there was no obvious wing-backs. There were three centre-backs, which ultimately that's what they used.
Yeah.
From TT, Piqué, Araujo. That's good. That's solid. And then I worked it out as a back three and a midfield diamond with a front three. And the midfield diamond was Busquets at the base, De Jong at the top, Gavi and Nico playing the lateral midfield roles. And then you had Dembele on the right, Abde on the left, Luke De Jong up front. So it was kind of a system without wing-backs. And he had wing-backs possible, available to him. Balde, with the young left-back, was on the bench. And Serginho Dest was on the bench. So it was kind of a unique, weird-looking lineup where you're kind of asking Gavi and Nico, who are both teenagers, to do this hybrid role of play midfield, but play wide and play deep and play up. It's incredibly difficult to ask young players who have just come into grips with, actually, I'm playing in Barcelona's first team. It would be hard enough for them to do it in their natural positions, let alone then be asked to do something that would be confusing for older players. So I think it might be wiser, actually, just to pick a system that suits Barcelona and suits the players playing in their right positions. Then I think they would have a better chance of starting to win some games of football.
Let's have a look at the ass.com. I'm not being rude. Have a look at the ass. so that is the average position as as actually happened on the pitch. So Araujo, so that's a back three, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got the subs on there as well, I think.
Yeah, so I'll take the subs off for now. Yeah,
take the subs off.
Yeah, right. So the starting line, Araujo is very much a right centre back, isn't he? PK centre and Umtiti left centre back. Then Busquets, where you'd expect him to be.
Yeah.
Nico, and then Luke de Jong.
Yeah. I know.
So he's in his average position's halfway line, and Frankie's actually further up the pitch than he is. And Abde is the most advanced
player.
Yeah.
So it's not a million miles off of what I thought. If you take out Luke de Jong, Busquets, and Frankie de Jong, 21, yeah. 5 Busquets, 13, 28. That's kind of the diamond I was looking at. I underestimated how deep Luke de Jong came in 17.
That's a ragged old diamond, isn't it? Yeah.
So it's the diamond is kind of there. If you take out number 17,
yeah,
30 is a bit wider, 28 is more in that diamond position.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Gavi is being asked to play in an unfamiliar role. I mean, it's difficult for a young player. It'd be hard enough to play for Barcelona in the first team in your first year as a 17-year-old in your natural position, let alone to be playing between... He should be playing in a midfield three, shouldn't he?
Yeah.
If he's playing in the team,
in
the classic Barcelona midfield style. He's been asked to play in the front three as well, and he's clearly a midfield player. And now he's being asked to do something different. So in the long run, it might be good for the young players to be playing in different positions. But in order to get wins at the moment, I just kind of feel that Xavi would be wiser in terms of sticking to the classic Barcelona style.
Yeah.
And playing 4-3-3.
This young man who I've never heard of, called Ferran Jutkla, came on and played almost exactly the same position as Dembele, it would seem there, wouldn't it? And Coutinho played where you'd expect him to, inside left channel.
Yeah.
Is that where you'd call that, isn't it? Yeah. So that's where we are. So, right. So let's have a quick chat about this man, Frankie de Jong. So what was between the lines of what Xavi was saying about young players versus senior players?
We had the benefit of Xavi speaking English now.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? It's impressive, yeah.
And he's quite open with his interviews as well.
Yeah.
And they said about the interview, the person asking the question said about the young players, how well they were playing. He said he was pretty short with his reply. Mm. He went, yes, that's the problem. So he was alluding to the fact that the better players at the moment are the younger players. So people then started to look at the senior players that were underachieving, and maybe Frankie de Jong was one of those that was named. And I get what they're saying. He's not playing his best football at the moment, but he's playing in a team that's a different setup in midfield every single game. He was asked to do a different job himself in this particular game. But I make the point that maybe Frankie de Jong is... Got to look at it from his perspective. When he joined Barcelona, he could have gone to the Bayern Munich, were interested as well. Mm. I think Juventus were interested as well. He was superb for Ajax. The big clubs wanted him for a reason, because he's a fantastic footballer. But when he joined Barcelona, he didn't sign up to be playing with players, youngsters. That he probably, with all due respect to Ferran Jutkla, he probably didn't know too much about him until the day before the game when he trained with the first team. Jutkla is a 22-year-old that was at Espanyol B last season, and Barcelona signed him on a free transfer. I'm not sure Frankie de Jong would have signed for Barcelona if that was the promise made to him.
Mm.
That, you know, when he signed for Barcelona, Messi was playing and Suarez was there, and his hopes were going to be he was joining one of the major clubs in Europe that would be aiming to win La Liga, to be challenging Real Madrid, to be playing in Clásicos, and to be competitive and hoping to win Champions Leagues. That would have been what the reason why he went to one of the biggest clubs in Europe. Now you look at the team he's playing in now, and I do wonder, we talk about the important players at Barcelona, he should be one, and he hopefully is going to be one. But it must be pretty demoralising now to be thinking, well, Messi's gone, Suarez has gone, Ronald Koeman's gone, who must have been an ally. Although I'm not saying for one moment he's got anything against Xavi coming in as manager, but and suddenly he's surrounded by players that until a few months ago he didn't know. You know, I don't think senior players have a problem with young players coming into the team. Like Pedri last season was spectacular. Senior players at Barcelona won't have a problem with that. Now they're looking at it and thinking, that's all we've got. Mm. You know, and De Jong is now thinking, well, who are we going to sign in the summer? In the January transfer window. We're seventh in the league now. We've been knocked out comprehensively by Bayern Munich. We're a million miles away from Bayern Munich. And so I can kind of see what he's thinking, his line of thinking must be. I'm sure he's probably as a good professional who's thinking, we've got to get ourselves out of this mess, but it's not his fault. Oh. The club imploded since he's joined them.
So a few weeks ago, you advocated them considering actually selling him in order because he might be a rare saleable asset. I wasn't buying it then because I think they need some actual current world-class players at their peak. Just for almost the status of the club as much as anything else. Yeah. But you would get a lot of money for him. Trouble is, it's a billion and a half of debt. And, you know, good as he is, you're not getting a billion and a half for him, are you? So it doesn't solve the financial issues, even selling a player. Even
I think
it solves it
short term because I think they've got to generate income, haven't they, for to improve their salary cap.
Yeah.
So that's what
then they can get a couple of free transfers in. Yeah,
they'll come up with somehow to put a dent in the debt somewhere along the line, whether it's a new debt, they will.
Well,
I don't know how they will.
Well, they're going to talk to the CVC, aren't they? The equity company. I think they are the finance company that was going to do that deal about the TV rights. But at the time, the Real Madrid and Barcelona said, no, it's a terrible deal, don't touch it. And now they're thinking of going back and talking to them. So
that's not strictly true. Right. At the time, Barcelona thought it was a good idea till Real Madrid and Florentino Perez told them he wasn't doing it and Barcelona shouldn't do it. And Laporta was getting criticism for not doing it. It's almost like he's become a lapdog for Florentino Perez, which isn't a good look for a Barcelona president.
So whether
the deal's right or wrong, I don't know. But the reason he didn't do it was because Real Madrid and Florentino Perez said they're not and they shouldn't. So he didn't do it.
But so it's a short, it looks a very short term thing to me to be selling your future TV revenue. Just, you know, I know they're in the hole now, but I don't know. You know, they've made lots of reckless financial decisions in the last 5 or 6 years, Barcelona Football Club, haven't they? So,
So I kind of get the mentality of Frankie de Jong.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
But he must be, you know, he's I'm not saying he's down tools or anything like that, but he must be downhearted that he joined the club that he thought was going to be genuine contenders as they have been for so long. And then suddenly they're not. And they're a million miles away from it. And he must be looking and thinking, how is this going to turn around? Do I stay here and participate in this fight back against the situation, which could take, no one knows how long this is going to take Barcelona to get back to the top.
A long time.
And And is he going to be willing to participate in that for a long period when other clubs around Europe already he's been linked because his performances haven't been great. Now there's talk of not him being unsettled, but maybe he should be one of those that sold with Manchester City and Juventus and Bayern Munich still allegedly still interested in him. So if you're him, you're looking at it and you're thinking, you know, what the word do? It's another issue that comes with the whole package of Barcelona that the players that were recently signed and they're looking and thinking, well, didn't expect this, which makes it even more interesting when you consider Dembele, who I understand it was cramp he came off with, but that must have been another scare. And also it would be other clubs will be looking and going, oh, not again. He sprints, pulls up, holds his hamstring, but allegedly it was cramp.
Again, so, we discussed him the other day with Patreons, I think, didn't we? we'll just do it quickly. My view is that Barca cannot be held hostage over the wages they pay to Ousmane Dembele to keep him. The fact that they paid 100 million is gone. That money's gone. They're not getting it back. It's finished. It was a mistake. You can't chase a bad transfer decision. So by all means, negotiate with him if you think he's important to the team now. But it's on purely on the basis of how important he will be over the next 3 years, and everything else has got to be forgotten. And so are you willing to pay hundreds of thousands of euros a week for a guy with his injury record, talented though he is? And my view is that, yeah, I'd be very limited in what I'd pay. I'd put a very strict limit on it. And if he goes, he goes.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I totally agree with you on that. Yeah. There will be clubs taking, because there's no transfer fee involved, and they'll be taking the gamble. His salary will be very, very high. And it might be someone else's issue to try and sort out, which I hope it does get sorted out somewhere for him, because I want to see him play more. He's a thrilling player to watch, still irritating, still annoying sometimes, still makes silly mistakes, but every now and then he's literally a breathtaking footballer, the way he beats players. So the talent is there, it's unlocking it, getting him playing on a regular basis. But is it going to be Barcelona's issue or somebody else's? That remains to be seen. So I think in summary, we're both agreeing now that despite these young, talented players coming into the team at Barcelona, with the rest of the squad, it's going to take quite a long time for that all to bear fruition and for them to be challenging the better teams in La Liga and Europe again.
And skillful, good decisions to be made, which is what they haven't done. And as yet, we haven't really seen an awful... We get it right every now and again, or Araujo and Pedri, obviously. That's the kind of signing they need, isn't it? You know, they need to be pulling these aces out of the pack somehow. But there we are. We better speed up, Terry, because we've done a long time. And let's just do Villarreal, shall we? 2-0 win against Rayo Vallecano. So a setback to Rayo's Champions League ambitions. Iraola, you fool, what are you playing at? So a good week for Villarreal, isn't it? Because they got through against Atalanta, which was the delayed game. So we didn't discuss that on Thursday with the Patreon. So, yeah, terrific result for them. Another one of those games, though, where Rayo, it could have been a very different outcome if the ball had ended up in the back of the net for Rayo.
It was a four-minute spell, wasn't it? They were annoyed with the first goal being allowed. Rayo claimed it was a foul. Personally, I didn't think there was enough there to be a foul. You had to look incredibly hard to find what they were complaining about. I think the goalkeeper makes a mess of coming for the cross, Dimitrievski, and gets caught up in the pack. And Mandy with a decent header, good movement from the corner to get free of his marker. And then they, because they were so annoyed, they lost their head, and Catania then gives away a silly penalty. Foul on Gerard Moreno, gets himself up, dusts himself down and scores the second. But Rayo had other chances. Mandy made a fantastic clearance off the line to deny C. Palazon. There was other chances for Rayo. It could probably, I think a draw would have been a fair result in this game, but Villarreal, much needed win. And now I think, you know, with the Champions League further down the line, I think we will see an improvement in the results from Villarreal. There has to be. Can't get any worse.
I think they had Man City first time round, didn't they? Then when they messed it up, they got Juve, which is, as it stands, a much better game, isn't it? Second time round for them. So you never know. They might have got a chance of getting through. Right, let's do Valencia against Elche.
We can do Mallorca-Celta quickly. The wind was absolutely diabolical in that game. One of the worst affected matches I've seen in terms of wind on a game of football.
Yeah.
Utterly ridiculous. So no wonder that ended up 0-0.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
And the other one was you're going to, tick that one off.
Right. So let's just quickly do Valencia, who won back to back, 7 undefeated for Bordalas's team, even though Bordalas wasn't there because he's got COVID. So best wishes to him. And Guedes scored a Guedes like goal, which Guedes doesn't do very often, in truth.
Yeah. Yep. No, he took his goal well. Maxi Gomez played up front as well. So Guedes recently been playing as a centre forward. I think Maxi Gomez playing up front and allowing Guedes to play off of him, that's better for Guedes. Much better position for him to play in. And Valencia played well. But so did Elche. So I'm looking at Elche, Francisco, and the two games he's had. Won the first one. Second one, they weren't bad. They've got some good attacking players. They was competitive in this game. And I don't see Elche getting relegated. But I must add the caveat to that, I'm struggling to pick someone who's going to get relegated.
Yeah.
Because even Levante, believe it or not, But no, Elche with, well, Levante, it was a weird game of football because it was win or nothing.
Yeah.
They're in a relegation battle. They weren't interested in a draw. The background of it is they've equaled the worst ever record by Sporting Gijón in 97-98 of 24 win this game, spread over two seasons. Levante, they just, so they weren't interested in a draw in this game. So they just forgot completely about defending. When
they're away to Espanyol. Yeah.
Yeah. Went all out attack. It was a brilliant game of football. Levante played really well. Defending was poor. But you kind of had I look back at the game now and I think, if they had been in the middle of this run, if they'd just been in a normal relegation battle and they'd won a couple of games this year, they probably would have defended better and settled for the draw. But they didn't want to be responsible for holding this new record. So they chucked everything at the win and it cost them. Javi Puado was excellent for Espanyol, promising young player. His first two goals for the club to get the third and the fourth to get Espanyol another good win. And Espanyol, 23 points, having a really good season on the back of being newly promoted. So tough on Levante. As you said, they went ahead twice, but they can't keep defending like that. So now they can get back to normal. With this, they got the monkey off their back now. They've got the record and look forward to the next game and hopefully, you know, come up with a... They've got to collect points. That's what I'm trying to say. It doesn't have to be a win every game like they approached that game at the weekend. So it still leaves them trailing. I just watched the Monday night game. Cadiz almost had a win there, threw that away in the 88th minute with Jorge Molina equalising off the goal from Santiago Arzamendia. That was, Cadiz probably shaded that as well. But life's tough when you're down there and you can't get a win. And you do have a habit of conceding late goals. Cadiz blew that. Levante are not a million miles away. A couple of wins, I know, when they're 1-25. But if they were to win a couple of games, it draws everyone back into them. And then we will see a genuine relegation fight. But I'm struggling to put my finger on the only game we haven't mentioned is Alaves Getafe. That was a 1-1 draw. Hosseli with a late equaliser. Getafe, one defeat in their last seven. And Kike Sanchez is going in the right direction. They're not rubbish. Levante are not rubbish, despite not winning a game this season. Getafe not. Cadiz have been poor lately, but saw signs of improvement in the game that we just witnessed on Monday evening against Granada. Alaves, not inspiring, I must admit. And Elche, I think, are going to be all right. So you probably go up to Celta Vigo, maybe Mallorca, because they're above Villarreal. We kind of forget, but there's a few teams going to be involved in that, I think.
Yes. So the points are, Levante have got eight, which is bad, isn't it? You know, eight draws, because they haven't won since April. Getafe, then you jump up to 12. Cadiz, 13th. Alaves have got a game in hand. I can't remember who it's again, so it's not an easy one, is it? 15. Elche, 15. Granada, 16. Celta Vigo, 17. Villarreal, 19. We assume they're going to be fine. Mallorca, 20. And then Athletic 21, Osasuna 22, Espanyol 23, I think Barcelona, everybody whisper it, 24 points. So the relegation just battle.
Looking at the goals for Levante, who scored more than Athletic Club.
Yeah.
What scored 16.
Yeah, Athletic have got 13, only Getafe with 11 is lower than that, isn't it? Which is shocking, isn't it? Yeah. The relegation, it's good, isn't it? You would hope it wouldn't.
Yeah.
Be, I mean, you'd have to bet Levante are going to go down. The utter failure to win any games at all
that first win, elusive win, they might then get a couple on the trot and all of a sudden they're back in the pack.
Yeah,
that's how ridiculous it is. After 17 games, you haven't won any, you're not totally cut adrift. You should be, but you're not.
We've got some Copa del Rey coming up this week, haven't we, in Spain? So there we are. And then we will be back with more La Liga next week. Next weekend, isn't it? You're not away next weekend, are you? So we'll talk about that. Simple as that, really. Yeah. If you want to be a Patreon.
My apologies for rambling on tonight. It's been a decent weekend of action.
It's good. I should mention, by the way, Terry, we've had Patreons concerned and disappointed about your health and safety approach to ladders.
Richard said he's got a t-shirt with the same. He said he's wearing the t-shirt. I don't think it was him falling off that ladder. He sent me a clip on a gif on Twitter, I can make getting all down with it for the young ones. picture a video footage on Twitter of someone falling off a ladder. I hope it wasn't him.
Yes.
Mine wasn't that bad, that's for sure. But no, fine.
Yes.
I rolled around a few times in agony and asked for a yellow card, but it wasn't forthcoming.
Yes, right. Well, go easy, Terry. And we will be back for certainly with the Patreons and back with the podcast for everybody again soon. So we'll see you then. Thank you for your support. Bye-bye.